Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be Daf Kuf Samach Vov Amud Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, ordering your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we open up the Gemara, we will notice a framed line and word. In the marking system, the frames indicate that the material contained therein is of a Tanaic nature. This, in fact, will be a quote from a source that we've seen already on Kuf Samachei Omid Beis. This is indicated by an arrow that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text in the little space between the Gemara and the Tosfos. That arrow has written underneath it Kuf Samachei Omid Beis, indicating that you should glance back at Kuf Samachei Omid Beis and try to find a corresponding arrow that indicates Kuf Samach Vav Aleph. And you will, if you look toward the bottom of the page, you'll notice a Tanaic source there. The quote that opens our Gemara comes from that source. Before we go on, however, let us take advantage of our topic headings that we provide in the marked Gemaras in the Shas Ozer. Under the heading No Say, we will try to explain what the general thrust of the upcoming Gemara will be. In this No Say, we've written the following: L'hasbir ha-hevdel bein reisha la-seifa, to explain the difference between the first part and the latter part, b'makor, in the source, or sources, shehuva b'kuf samachei omid beis, in those sources that were quoted on the previous omid. Lama baseifa amrinon diad bal hashtar ala tachtoina. Why is it that we say in the seifa that the lender who's holding his collection document has the lower power, the lesser power in terms of collection? V'chishuv haschum hu bekesef, and the calculation concerning the amount that he is able to collect is in terms of silver. Mashen kein bereisha oiso chishuv bezahav, as opposed to the reisha, the earlier part of that same source, seems to indicate the calculation is made in terms of gold. So we open up our Gemara with a quote from that source, Zohov Bedinrin. There is written in a shtar this expression that the loan was extended in terms of Zohov Bedinrin, a vague expression, gold in a dinrin form. Generally speaking, dinrim are a type of currency. Ein pochos mi b'shnei dinrin kesef zahav. We say that the lender is able to collect at least, or no less than, 2 dinrin kesef worth of gold. So, how much gold is he able to collect? 2 dinarin kesef worth of gold. 2 dinarin of silver worth of gold. The Gemara asks, V'ema, notice the use of the double underline. This is a continuation of the same marking that we saw in our previous shiur. This was part of a list of V'ema questions. Questions that suggest alternative pshatim. So here too, having read the source, the Gemara now will suggest an alternative reading, an alternative explanation, as follows: V'emo dahavo pricho, betray dinri dahavo komar. Why not say that the lender in this case is able to collect dahavo pricho, gold filings, at the value of 2 dinrei zov, at the value of 2 gold dinar, In other words, 2 gold dinar worth of gold filings, which would be worth much more than the pshat that we gave, that the source gave, that he's able to collect 2 dinar kesef worth of gold, 2 silver dinar worth of gold, which is, as we said, worth much less. So we see in the Seifa, we see in this section that he's collecting a minimum amount. The answer is provided by Abaye. Omar Abaye, Yad Baal Hashtar al Atachtoino. The one who holds the shtar has the weaker position. In other words, given 2 possible explanations for a matter of doubt, for a document whose language is not 100% clear, the one holding the document has the lesser strength, and the one, if he wants to collect more, so we would say Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya, that the burden of proof is upon him if he wants to extract more. That's Abaye's answer. As we go on the Gemara, we will be adopting the reading that is suggested in the Mesoras HaShas, which reduces the next 3 lines to just a few words that we've written in here. I hachi resha nami. If that be the case, so why not apply the same standard to the resha? Let us glance at the Rashbam. I hachi resha nami. The Rashbam points out that this question could be raised against 2 points in source material that we found on the previous Omid, as follows. Bein de'idoch b'raiso k'maiso. Whether we talk about the earlier source that was found at the bottom of Kuf Samachei Omid Beis, we have sources that we noted with a crown marking and indicated in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara on that previous Omid, a 1 and 2. So, in looking at the first brisa, dekotoni, that it said there, kesef bedinrin, that if the shtar contained this vague expression, that a loan was extended in terms of kesef bedinrin, we say, ein pochos mi bishnei dinrim didohov kesef, that the person, the lender trying to collect, is able to collect no less than 2 gold dinar worth of silver. Well, using the principle that we just had, Nemo, why not say Yad Baal Hashtar v'chulei, that the one holding the document has the lesser strength. We said Yodo al Hatachtona v'havi lonu lefaresh, and we could have explained that as follows: Grutois kesef b'shnei dinar kesef, some silver filings, grutois kesef, some pieces pieces, as opposed to coins, grutos kesef, pieces of silver, at the value of 2 silver dinar, which is much less than what is actually suggested in the source. Ubein dehach masnisa, or whether it be the other source, dikotoni, where there too there was a vague expression where it said dohov dinrin, that a loan was extended in terms of silver, of gold dinrin, the dinrin dohov, or that expression, dinrin zahav, appeared in the shtar, in the document, and the ruling was ein pochos mishnei dinrim dahav zahav, that the lender is able to collect no less than 2 gold dinar. Name all, well, why not say ein pochos mishove shnei dinrim kesef zahav, that the lender is able to collect no less than 2 silver dinar worth of gold, but we say 2 silver dinar worth of gold, which is much less than what the source actually says. So the question in simple terms is, why is it that in the Seifa we seem to say that the one holding the shtar, the lender, his hand is, he has the underhand, he's Yodo ala tachtona, he has the lesser strength, whereas in the Reisha, in the earlier quotes, we saw him having the upper hand. The Gemara provides a very simple answer. It all depends on the language, and in this case, the language is determined by one letter, a one-letter difference. Omar Rav Ashi, Reisha dekosav dinri, in the Reisha, one is supposed to understand that this word was used, as opposed to what actually appears. We see the word with a nun, but that's not the correct understanding. In the Reisha, the expression appears in terms of the shtar. In the original document, the expression that was used was dinari. The word dinari implies gold. Seifa de kosav dinarin. In the Seifa, though, the word that appeared in the shtar was with a nun, and the word dinarin with a nun at the end has the implication of silver. The Gemara asks, "Umenot tamra deshani bein dinari ledinarin." What is the basis for making a distinction? In other words, do we find in a source a distinction between the word without a nun and with the nun? The Gemara answers, yes, we do. Desanya. We have a long source. In effect, we're going to call this a long answer only because the Gemara brings in the source to serve as the answer. And this source and answer continue to the top line of Amud Beis. Within this source, there will be a lot of information that's not directly germane to the study of Bava Basra. Amir Tzashem, we intend to learn all of the Shas, and we will come across the sugyas that are referred to in the source in their respective masechtas. However, what's of utmost importance is to note two words that appear in this source, and when we see the two words, we will notice a distinction. We have provided, with the marvelous marking system that we're all privileged to use, a dashed underline to highlight that difference, to highlight the two words that we're seeking out. And as you can see, if you glance down in the source, you see the word bedinari, and you see the word bedinarin with the nun, and the earlier word without the nun. And that is the whole reason that we're bringing in the source. So as we go on in the source, we will be cognizant of the fact that we're not delving into the details of that which is taught here. The source, in general, will be discussing the issue of the sacrifices that a woman has to bring upon either childbirth or ziva, which is a type of bodily emission that creates a state of tumah. There is a difference in halacha between a woman that is in these respective states in a certain sense. In other words, let's focus on the issue of the example of births, for example, where a woman bore five children on five different occasions, and for each birth she owes a sacrifice, as opposed to a case where a woman is not sure if she bore a child or a miscarriage. Whether it be a child or a miscarriage, this warrants the bringing of a korban without getting into details, as we mentioned earlier. Therefore, since we include in the realm of bringing sacrifices the issue of miscarriages, there could certainly arise doubts. If a woman is in a state of doubt, so the topic of bringing a korban takes on a different role, different meaning, different standard. Let's continue now in the source. Ha'isha shehoyu aleha sofek chomesh leidos, sofek chomesh zivos. A woman who was obligated to bring korbanos as a result of five births, but involving doubt, or five ziva periods involving doubt. Her legal obligation is to bring one korban. As a result of bringing the one korban, the one sacrifice, that enables her to achieve a state of purity that will enable her to eat holy sacrificed meat. And the other sacrifices, namely if she brings one, you would think she might have a balance of four, because we said there were an issue of five doubtful births. So we say that once she brings one of those sacrifices, that's enough. The rest, she's not duty bound to bring. Hoyu aleo chomesh leidois vados, chomesh zivos vados. If, however, you have a woman that had five definite births, or five definite ziva periods, nevia korban echad, she brings one korban, and as a result of bringing one korban, she thereby gains the ability to consume korban meat, v'ocheles bizvachim, v'hashar oleh hachova. However, in this case, she is duty-bound, she has an obligation to bring the balance, the other four korbanos. Maise v'omdu kinim b'yushalayim b'dinrei zahav. Things became very expensive at a certain point in time, where the kinim are the bird offerings, this is what she's expected to bring as a result of these events, and those birds became very expensive to the extent that they cost dinarei zahav. Their cost was in terms of gold coins. Omar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the leader of the Jews at that time, was besides himself. He was very upset at this rise in prices, and he said the following, Hamoin Hazeh, which is an expression of oath. He said, Hamoin Hazeh im olin halaylo, if I go to sleep, achiu bedinorin, if they do not drop in price into the dinorin, the silver coin standard. In other words, I'm not going to go to sleep until they become cheap. Nichnas lebeizdin v'limeid, he went into the court and taught the following, and you'll notice a difference in law in what he teaches in as opposed to what we learned above. Ho'isha shoyu aleha chomesh leidois vadois, chomesh zivos vados, a woman who had five births of a definitive nature, five ziva periods of a definitive nature. Mevia korban echod v'ocheles bezvachim, she brings one sacrifice that enables her to eat other korbanos. V'ein hashar halachova, we squiggle underline the word v'ein as to emphasize this is the new point in his teaching, and the rest are not obligatory. In other words, all the bird salesmen realize that they're going to lose out a lot. That all these ladies with five, for example, with five korban obligations, all they're going to bring is one. So they ought to reconsider their pricing policy. And as a result of his teaching, v'omdu kinin bo bayom b'ravasayim, that very same day, the cost of the kinim went down to a quarter of a dinar. In other words, they plummeted in price. The point being from this whole long source was to show that there is a difference between the expression dinarei as opposed to dinarin. Continuing in the Gemara, the top of Kuf Samach Vav Omid Beis, we quote from the Mishnah on Kuf Samach Hei Omid Beis, Kosuv Milamalo V'chulei. The Mishnah on Kuf Samachei Amud Beis, the lower part of the page, indicated that if there's a discrepancy in the document whereby the upper part of the page says, for example, that the amount of money concerned was a mona and the lower part of the document said Mosayim, you know, 100 versus 200, or the other way around, the Mishnah says that we determine the actual amount in question by what it says on the lower part of the document. The topic heading that we've included on the outside margin, Hevdelim Bema Shekosuv Bishtar Lamala Milamato, differences between, examples of differences between things found in an upper part of a document and as opposed to the lower part of a document. Tanu Rabbonan, Yilmad Hatachtoin Min Ha'Elyoin Ba'oisachas. We are to learn the lower part of a document from the upper part if it's a matter of one letter. In other words, if one letter is missing from a word on the lower part of the document, this source is teaching us that which we saw in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that if amounts of money, for example, are determined by that which is written in the lower part of the shtar, or if there's an absolute difference between that which is written in the lower part of the shtar as opposed to that which is written in the upper part of the shtar, what is the need at all for having information in the upper part of the shtar? So we said that if there's some letter missing, if there's something unclear about that which appears in the lower part, we will learn, we will try to achieve clarity by referring to that which is in the upper part. So here is an example. If a word appears missing a letter in the lower part, and it's complete in the upper part, so we will fill in, so to speak, the missing letter by referring to that which is in the upper part. This source goes on by saying, Avolo b'shte oisiois. However, if it's a matter of completing two letters that are missing in the lower part, I will not refer to the upper part for that purpose. An example of one letter difference, kagon chanan mechanani. In other words, if the in the lower part of the shtar you have the a name written in Hanan, and in the upper part a name appears Hanani, I will say that the party who is the subject of the shtar, his real name is Hanani. Therefore, even if in the lower part of the shtar the name Hanan is written in, he's not the real subject of the document, because I say I'm missing a letter, and I see, in fact, the same, the basic same name above, but with an extra letter, which, of course, can create a situation that you're dealing with an entirely different person. And another example, the Anan, me Anani. If in the lower part of the shtar a name Anan appears, and in the upper part the name appears with an extra letter, a yud, at the end, so I will say that the subject of the shtar is Anani, another name. The Gemara asks, "My shno shtei oisios deloi." Why is it that if there's a two-letter discrepancy, that I will not learn the missing letters that I notice in the lower part from the more complete word in the upper part? And the reason that you might suggest that I will not learn two letters is Dilma Misrami Shem Ben Arba Oisiois Vahavile Palge Dishma, because I might encounter a situation where the two letters in account for half, 50% of the name, and that's considered too much to learn. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us just take note of our Mivneh, in the outside margin, the structural note, because we've encountered a triangle, one of our geometric forms. So in the outside margin, we've indicated the triangle, Shlovim Lahasbir. These are stages in attempting to explain, Maishno Chiser Ois Achas, why is there a difference between the case of a missing singular letter, Shlomedim Tachto Me'elion, where we will learn the lower part from the upper part, Umaishno Shnei Oisiois Delo, and as opposed to the case of two letters that are missing in the lower part, that I will not learn their presence from the upper part where we do find those two letters. So the Gemara is in the middle of suggesting, if it's because two letters may constitute 50% of a given name, the Gemara goes on, I hochi, ois achas nami, one letter which you do give me license to learn from the upper part, I don't see why I should allow that. Dilmo Misrami Shem Ben Shtei Oisios. I might encounter a situation where the name concerned is a two-letter name, and if I'm going to learn a missing letter from that which is found in the upper part, once again, one letter out of a two-letter name, Vavile Palge Dishma, that also constitutes half the name. In other words, I'm learning 50%. And if you're opposed to learning such a large percentage of missing information, so then even one letter should be likewise not learned from the upper part. Ella, so we come to the new stage of explanation. Ella shtei oisiois hainu taimo. The reason we do not learn two letters that are missing, dilmo misrami shem ben shalosh oisiois vehavile ruba deshma. The reason that we object to learning two missing letters is that at times, two constitutes a majority of the name. In other words, a number of letters that, when missing, would constitute a majority, that number of letters I will not learn. Two can constitute a majority. However, a missing singular letter can never constitute a majority. At most, it may constitute a 50%, a 50% missing, but not above that. The Rashbam says in the narrow lines, "V'havilei ruba d'shmo, the kulei hai vaday lo yalfinun me'elyon." That so much, namely, rove, a majority, we will not learn from the upper part. Sh'shtei oisios lo chiser hasofer. We would not think that the scribe left out two letters. V'inosein hamomon l'mi sh'shmo kach kamo shekosuv b'tachton. And as a result of that we would not suspect that he leaves out two letters, we will say that the real subject of the document is the individual whose name is found in the lower part, as according to the teaching of the Mishnah, that matters of doubt or discrepancy are determined by the lower part. The exception being, if you encounter a situation of a singular missing letter, then we will achieve clarity by referring to the upper part. The Gemara continues with issues of difference between upper part and lower part. However, the nature of the discussion is not directly related to the previous Gemara. Hence, we've put a slash in to create a certain division in the thought process. Omar of Popo, Pshinta li sefel milamalo v'kefel milamato. If in the upper part of the document, the item that is the subject of the document is described by the word samach pe lamed, namely a sefel, a cup. This might be a document concerning a hafkoda, an entrustment where something is given over to be watched, or a document in which a sale is recorded. The item that is the subject of the document in the upper part is spelled with these letters, Samach Pei Lamed. In the lower part of the document, when the subject of the document is being referred to, we notice a word Kuf Pei Lamed appears. Kuf Pei Lamed means something that's folded. It could be an article of clothing, an article of material that is customarily folded, as opposed to a cup. So the question is, if in the upper part of the document a cup is referred to, and in the lower part of the document an article of clothing is referred to, what is the subject of the document? So Rav Papa tells us that this point is obvious. Haku hoilech achar hatachtoin. That we will follow that which appears in the lower part of the document, as was taught in our Mishnah. Boy Rav Papa. Rav Papa raises a question using the same words, however switching around the positioning of the words in the document, and showing that in this case, in the following case, there is room for raising a question. Kefel milamala, v'sefel milamata, where in the upper part of the document, the word that appears begins with a kuf. The word that appears in the lower part of the document begins with a samach. When writing out these words, even though maybe when one looks at the printed Gemara, there's an obvious difference between these letters, and there's always a difference between these letters. However, if you could imagine the kuf, as you can see, has an extended leg to it. If the lower part of the leg, the part that extends beyond the base of the basic letter, becomes erased, you could imagine that turning into a samach. Therefore, we see in the upper part the word describing the subject of the document beginning with a kuf. The lower part of the document, which in general determines what the subject is, appears beginning with a samach. Rav Papa goes on with his question. Mi chayshinon lezvuv oiloi. Are we choshesh? Are we to suspect that maybe a fly landed on the wet ink when the scribe was preparing the document, and the kuf, which is found in the upper part of the document, lost the lower part of its leg. In other words, you could say that the feet of the zvuv benefited by the foot of the kuf, and thereby erased the kuf, the bottom part of the kuf. And this would create a situation where it's nimchak ois achas. Let's just go over the case with a greater degree of accuracy. In the case that Rav Pop is asking about, the word kefel appears with a kuf on the upper part, and the word sefel appears on the lower part. It could be that the word sefel, when being written on the lower part, actually had a leg to it. The samach really had a leg to it, and it was really written as a kuf, corresponding to that which appeared in the upper part. And if that be the case, we would treat this as a situation of the lower part missing a letter, and we set a rule above that when the lower part of the document is missing a letter, then we do revert to the upper part of the document for clarity. In this case, the upper part of the document has the word kefa with a kuf written in. So are we to suspect the fly, oilo, or not? As far as this question is concerned, it remains unresolved. Teku. We present in our markings another slash, indicating once again that even though in general we're talking about issues of unclarity in documents, the following Gemara is of a totally new nature. Hahu dahava kosav bei shis mea vezuza. There was a document in which the amount of money was described or written in as follows: 600 and a zuz. Not very clear how much money is in question. Sholcha Rav Shravya kamei d'Abaye. Rav Shravya sent this issue to Abaye for clarification. How are we to rule on this case? We've presented in the markings Aleph. You can see written above this word Aleph, O Dilma. The expression O Dilma is squiggle underlined. Beis, two sides of the question. Shis mea istiri vizuza. Are we to say that the amount of money is 600 istiri sloim, a sela coin, and azuz, or O Dilma shis mea priti vizuza, or 600 prutos, prutos being a very small coin, and azuz? For illustration purposes only, we will say, and we're not translating, but a parallel case or a parallel example to the case of the Bayes proposition, the 600 priti, one might say 600 pennies and azuz. Amar Lei Rav Abaye, to whom this question was sent, responds, Dal priti, you can forget or you can discount the second example or the second proposition in your question, namely the 600 priti vizuz. The lo kasvi bishtora, people would never write 600 prutos. Why not? The asuchi misachein lehu umashvi lehu zuzi, people would group those small coins into a larger currency, and that larger currency would be recorded. In other words, we'll go back to our suggested example. If you found in a document 600 pennies, or in other words, you would never find 600 pennies because a person would record, instead of 600 pennies, a person would record $6. Likewise, over here, a person would never record in a shtar 600 pruti, but rather he would group the pruti into a larger currency and that be recorded. So as far as we're concerned, what are we left with then? My Amris. Shis mea istiri vizuza. are we to suggest that maybe it's 600 sloyim and azuz? However, that too we cannot say. In other words, the lender who is trying to collect with this document to suggest that he would get 600 sloyim, which is a very large coin, he won't get that either. And the explanation that we suggest is based on what we find in the Rashbam as well. But the Gemara itself says over here, why not 600 sloyim and azuz? Yad bal hashtar al hatachtona. We say that he who is holding the shtar has his hand is on the bottom, so to speak, not upper hand, but the lower hand. The question then is, if you're going to rule out the two sides of that which was proposed in the question, so then what does he actually get? As far as that's concerned, the Rashbam has two approaches. The first approach is that he will get the 600 palga d'zuza. In his second shot, Vinir Ali, he says he will get 600 zuzi. Zuzi as opposed to sloim or istiri, zuzi being a smaller currency. In fact, there are 4 zuz in every sela. Either way, we see from this that based on the principle of Yad Baal Hashtar Al Hatachtona, he would not get that large amount of 600 sloim or 600 istiri, but rather something less. With that, we end our shiur for today.